हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गराधर शिवसरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय. सो भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय 1 आदिकाण्ड 3 भक्ति अलोन इज द कंक्लूजन ऑफ ऑल स्क्रिप्चर्स पेज 80. So then we're continuing with Jiva Goswami. This is for, what did Jiva Goswami say? Okay, so this is then the Anucheda. And speaking of Varnashram, bhakti is said to be the dharma for all humans. Okay. Then Jiva Goswami continues, the Lord is the proof, mulam, of Dharma, since he is all the Vedas. He is all the Smritis. He is the proof for those who know the Lord composed of the Vedas. By Shruti and Smriti, it is known that Dharmas without the Lord are useless, and Dharma of the Lord is necessary. Right? So here is that, who know the Lord composed of the Vedas, that they know the Lord is the Vedas, the Lord. The Vedas come from him, so there's no question of whether they apply or not. They are authority. They are appropriate. Then it's just a matter of Veda then mentions that because they're giving the broad range of rules, you have to apply that to yourself in your situation. So then, knowing that all those rules are there, then how the Acharyas and that and their example, and then how our spiritual, you know, our spiritual connections, how and the ones in our sphere, how they're guiding and giving, you know, like for ourselves and relevant instruction of what Srila Prabhupada has said, representing the Acharyas, then we are to see what applies to us and what doesn't. It's not a matter of, oh, the Veda doesn't apply here. That's not our position and that's not the reality. As it said, he is the proof for those who know the Lord composed of the Vedas. So in other words, those who don't know the Lord, you know, the Vedas come from Krishna and their eternal nature, then yes, the Shastra is not proof for them, because if it matches with their idea of proof, means in other words, dharmas that are without the Lord, then if it connects to that, in other words, they have dharmas that on their own they consider important of value. And if the Lord connects to that, then that part is nice. And the part where it doesn't exactly connect or doesn't support what their idea of Dharma is, then they'll discuss whether it's relevant or not. And, you know, like we were seeing before is, you know, so what was it? Seeing Prabhupada in connection with the Shastras, and Shastras in connection with Prabhupada. And they're trying to say something very, very, intelligent. And at the same time, it has that social kind of thing and that all-inclusiveness. But the point is they're leaving the door open for picking and choosing what they like and what they don't, as opposed to, no, it has to be based on the Vedas. So your options are given by the Vedas, not you have other options. And then you decide within that which ones apply for you, right? And then how do you make that decision on which ones apply to you? Because that's also not whimsical, right? The choices are not whimsical because they're based on the Veda and the Acharyas. And the choice is also not whimsical. It's based on what is supportive of pure devotional service, what is going to be favorable for moving forward in pure devotional service. So then like that, you put it together. Okay, let's say, just for example, we have these 10 options. Now, of those 10 options, let's say 5 of them that will apply nicely and be supportive of pure devotional service. So that's what I choose. You know, those, a combination of which ones, you know, are more relevant to my situation today. and in other situations that I may be in, some of the others are, you know, so it moves around, but within those five. And that's what's the five is what applies now, you know, for the situation, because someone's a brahmachari, a grihastha, like that, but it may change with time. And so some other ones will be. And so then one always has to see is that it's going to be, the options are from the Veda, and then what applies to us will be what will be supportive of pure devotional service. Because it's all about that. So, and that is described by the Veda. The Vedas are describing that pure devotional service is the ultimate goal, the ultimate practice, the ultimate understanding. And so within that, then we will apply it to our situation. So it is individual, and at the same time, is it has the greater, you know, how it, to the community, and at the same time, there's a standard. So it's like the Vedas, following the Vedas, and this and the Vedas as according to bhakti, you know, pure devotional service as given by the acharyas, and especially the Gaudiyas, it's actually the perfect system for conscious living entities to interact with each other in the context of the Lord. You know, because it's complete. When you go to, when you take a right political stand, they have standards, but they can't necessarily accommodate individuality much. Then when you have, it's about the rule. Then when you have the liberal, they're about the individual, but they have no standard. The standard is whatever they feel like today. So you follow it today, you're good. But tomorrow, if they change and you didn't change, then now you are, you know, have a problem. So you're going to have that aspect that it doesn't have standards. So it can't mean, so one can deal with the group and have community, but not so much individuality. The other one's individuality, but there's no group or community. And then the standards will tend to be speculative. Well, here the standards are there and they are eternal. You know, they always work. And so that's the thing, because you can say, oh, time, place, and circumstance, but everything's time, place, and circumstance, and it's changing. So even you say the modern, oh, it's time, place, circumstance, we have to follow, but even that is changing all the time. So the point is, so how do you decide what are your options since it's changing? You have to take from the Veda. So that's the thing. And so how do we know the Veda? Through the acharyas. How do we know what the acharyas are giving us? Through the founder acharya. Right? And then we can study and directly approach the Adi Guru, and then we have the support of the other Vaishnavas who are able to give relevant instruction and help us in understanding and appreciating what the founder acharyas has given us. Does that make any sense? We're good? Yeah? Yes, please.
Maharaj, maybe I'm lost, but I'm not clear. What are we trying to prove exactly, and why is Lord is the proof of that?
Because you have to have, when you're dealing with logic, right? You have to have proof.
Yeah.
So now proof is going to be either pratyaksha, coming from the senses, from anuman, from mental speculation, or from shabda, from authority. And so of shabda, then that means it has to come from those who are apta. So, you know, those who have knowledge and understanding in the area. But since you're dealing with, so that will be there, but the supreme aspect of that's going to be the Lord himself. Because the Lord himself, from him comes the Shastra. And so those who are speaking based on Shastra, you know, that's going to be the highest, that's going to be the appropriate form of shabda, you know, of authority and apta. Does that make sense? So anything you're doing, because let's say you have some, you know, contemporary issue. So the point is where are you getting the basis for even discussing it or considering it? Someone will have seen something, someone will have heard something, someone will have thought something. You know, or someone will have read something in Prabhupada's books, or someone will have read something in the Vedas, you know. And so then that will be the basis for the different individuals to then discuss the subject matter. So what it's pointing out is that bhakti alone is the conclusion. So then you have to understand, is that conclusion, it's about you've given up, you know, all other worship, you're giving up the worship of the Vedas. So the karma, the jnana, and upasana, when it deals with demigods, is given up. And all that's kept is that worship of Vishnu. And so then that's based on the scriptures, you know, and what the acharyas have said. And then from there, then the conclusion is pure bhakti, right? Because bhakti, even you're worshiping, you're doing karma or jnana or worshiping demigods, you still have to use bhakti to make it efficient. So bhakti alone, bhakti is the active principle. And bhakti already includes, in other words, activities that you see in karma or jnana, their essence, what's in line with bhakti, is already within the process of bhakti. When you take it, when you take the activities of bhakti, but don't see the connection or understand or act on the platform of the connection with the Supreme Lord, then that's called karma. Because I'm following an action in a field with knowledge and an identity. I'm following an action that produces a result. I want the result. It's called karma. When I see the field according to, please, you know, Krishna, I have the knowledge, you know, about that process of Krishna. I have an identity connected with as servant of Krishna. I perform the action to get the result, but it's all for Krishna, pleasing Krishna. That's bhakti. So same way with karma or with jnana or worshiping the devatas. It's all going to be the same point. It's what bhakti is doing in Samanda, Abhideya, and Prayojana, it's centered on the Lord. When you remove the Lord from the equation, then the mechanics that are left, what knowledge is left after removing the Lord, what action is left, what results are left, what identity is left, that's then called, if it's in the intellect, it's called jnana. If it's in the fruit, it's called karma. If it's worshiping the demigods, it's called upasana. So that's what's happening, is that there's a mistake that you have this, you have all these nice activities produce result, then there's bhakti, that's just this impersonal nothingness, that there's nothing there. But that's coming from material consciousness, that you're slowly sinking. Okay, he was just going slowly, 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 and I was thinking, you know, is he going to disappear here? He's got to go get something to eat or go to the bathroom. And all that's left is the fan slowly going around.
So, Maharaj, can we say...
Go ahead.
The Lord is the proof that the bhakti is the only process to achieve the Lord.
Yes, yes. Because everything's about the Lord. He is the scriptures. He is the conclusion of the scriptures. You know, that's what he's saying. Before is that he is the Veda. He's the knower of the Veda. He's the source of the Veda. He's the purpose of the Veda. So everything's connected back to him. You know, so all knowledge is in the Veda. So even in the modern thing, like you have these colloquial sayings and stuff, they work because they have a truth to them that is given, you know, by the Lord in the Veda. But the local people don't know it, so they're just going by the colloquial thing. Or sometimes it is based on the Veda and they see practical application in day-to-day life, so then you end up with the local sayings, you know, in India, you know, by those who do practice the Vedas. But, you know, so it's one of the points of evidence in the 10 forms, but it's counted within the aspect of Shabda, you know, that is there, or people have practically seen it, so it has that aspect of Anuman, or you can see it, it's something I can see, so I call it Pratyaksha, whatever it is, but it's one of the 10, but it's not the main of these three, you know. And then we see four, logic itself, then we give the comparison is used, because it's an item to use in logic. Though it acts as an evidence, but it's an evidence based on Shabda. So we're just taking as the Shabda is saying this, in this situation, then we're applying it in this other situation, and somebody can see, yes, they match. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, so it's used as a tool, but it's not actually the main evidence. The main evidence is all Shabda. And then as supporting that, then we use comparison. We'll use the contemplation like that. We'll use the pratyaksha. So we're going to use those elements. Does that make sense? So it all comes back to logical thinking.
Yeah.
Because otherwise people will just go, you know, but he feels like that. And then everybody's just supposed to, you know, there'll be this, you know, this like a chorus, you know, singing a high, you know, harmonious note that will fill the atmosphere, and everybody around, you know, looks up and then, you know, bows down to the, you know, absolute truth that's been spoken, because the guy said, but he feels like it, you know. And so that's their shabda. I mean that's their authority, that's their evidence. You see why? Because, you know, that's all. And then the kid, of course, says, why? Because, you know, and you know, it's one of those standard things the parents all have to go through. But that's the thing. They're asking for evidence. And we're just saying, the parents should say it's because, you know, I mean, and then so, because I said so. Okay, so then, okay, it's coming from apta, from authority. But at the same time, as the ultimate authority is Krishna, and then the scriptures and the sadhus, we should take our authority back to that. That's why we should speak according to the founder Acharya, because he's speaking on behalf of, you know, of the previous Acharyas and the scripture and Krishna. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the question that we're doing here. So Jiva Goswami is just taking everything one at a time, anything that you could have a complaint about in discussing Shabda. I mean, means bhakti is the conclusion of scripture. He's going through everything. No, but the scriptures say this. It has so many conclusions. There's so many things. He's removing everything one after another after another. So that's each anucheda is addressing a particular point. You know, and he's putting in a order that will make sense to us. That's why he said there was a point being made, and he's quoting one verse. He's making the point is, yes, this other verse, you know, may also be seen in this context, but we're going to discuss that later. Mm-hmm. So in other words, let's say there's two conversations, you know, in the Bhagavatam. And so both of them deal with that, but one is specifically dealing with a particular, the first point you want to make, and the other one may be making a more advanced understanding of that. So you're going to do the more basic one first.
Yes.
You know? And then you're going to step by step go through. So that's what Jiva Goswami is doing here. And also is that proof for those who know the Lord composed of the Veda. So you know the Lord, and that the Veda is talking about the Lord. The Lord speaks the Veda. That's the 20th quality of Krishna, the 64 qualities. That is he speaks according to the Veda. He speaks, he acts according to the Veda. So we can say as, oh, the Veda is this, that, but that's how the Lord acts. So the Lord is the Veda, and he acts according. If he is the Veda, naturally he'll act according to the Veda. And so when he speaks the Veda, and then the great personalities then speak the Smritis, then it's all going to be in line with the Lord, and therefore in line with bhakti. You might take the mechanical elements of it. You know, it's just like, let's say, we're making a philosophical point. And then for an example, we say, let's say something from Varnashram to show our point as an example, you know, that there's something pratyaksha that you can see. Now, so much of the time, then those who are listening to this point, then they have an interest in your example. And then they'll ask a question on your example. And not completely ignoring the philosophical point you made, or not understanding what you made. And so they get distracted by that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you know, Jiva Goswami is trying to keep people from getting distracted and just go through point by point. So that logic is there. You keep people to the logic. And so when you're giving, you know, when you're doing using Upanaya, then you're showing the Pratyaksha. When I say my reasoning, right, means I say my point. It's a philosophical point that's given in the Veda. Like here, bhakti alone is a conclusion of the scripture. Then I'm going to use Anuman to apply it into, you know, how you're making the point. You know, as Hetu, as my reason. Then I'm going to give example as Pratyaksha. You know, giving example as something that people can see. They've had experience of it. Because I hear something from the scriptures, I contemplate it, then I see it. So I'm going to give an example that people have seen. They may not have thought of it in the context of this thing, but they've seen it, right? Then having them seen it, now I'm going to say, just like that, I'm going to make the comparison. I'm going to use the fourth kind of evidence, the comparison that, you know, just like that example and that, then what I'm talking about is the same. Because generally speaking, an example, you don't give the thing that you're talking about as the example.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
So you know, someone asked, you know, I said, you know, the blue ocean, what's blue? You know, it's like the ocean. No, you say, oh, it's like the sky. Oh, yeah, okay. Then, you know, and so in the same way, like the sky is blue, the ocean is blue. Does that make sense? So with comparison, now I brought it to back to my point. So now I can establish again, you know, my point that I made, you know, that is, you know, is supposed to be the shabda or the, you know, the scriptural evidence. And so I bring it back to that point. So I've made this complete cycle. So that will be an adhikarana. You know, the panchanga nyaya, it's made its circle. Right, so an anucheda is a point that you're making and establishing in that progression, because it may be there's so many aspects. That's why the acharyas, they may say a point, then they'll go in and they'll talk about that one aspect, then they'll take another angle, another, like these big purports, like let's say for the first verse of Bhagavatam, or you know, things that every paragraph basically you could say is an anucheda. They're establishing a particular point, but it's all in the context of the greater point that they're trying to establish. It's not just, oh, there's so many points here, but there's an overall point that's being made. Does that make sense? And so then that may be grouped together and like this, and so then you get your adhikarana, so then the logic will be there. But logic is such that it can work in that small circle even within that anucheda. You know, like that if need be, how much needs to be. And then it'll work within the adhikarana. And then the adhikarana is going to work within a greater scope, you know, within your adhyaya. You know, the adhyaya will be within the whole work. So that's why then the same cycle is being used throughout. So the point is bhakti alone is the conclusion. So that's what you're trying to get to. So Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Okay, so he's the supreme. But the point is, then, okay, he's the supreme. So that's the jnana, the sambandha aspect. But now what's the point? Is we are part and parcel of that supreme, and we have a natural relationship with him in devotion. So therefore, then acting in that devotion, I will do activities to please the Supreme Lord. Right? So that will be the point, because that establishes, yes, that's something you can do. And then you establish bhakti, therefore, is the thing. So we saw in the last one, the Krishna Sandarbha, that Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam is established. Now we're showing that same Krishna, that is the thing, how bhakti to him. So we're starting with Vishnu and going up, and then it'll go farther and farther until that, you know, serving Krishna in prema rasa, you know, prema braja rasa, that's what we're trying to get to. Then you'll be showing them then in Preeti Sandarbha what that means. What is prema? What is that affection and attraction and attachment to the Lord? And the finer points of that until it brings it to the topmost. So it could say it will be, the Sandarbhas would be taking all the conversations that Lord Chaitanya is having in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and expanding them based on the knowledge of the Bhagavatam. So all the Sambandha aspects are established, all the Abhideya, all the Prayojana. But it's that same kind, but it has that same padati because it's coming from Lord Chaitanya's instructions that, okay, you're starting at one point and then you naturally make a progression and you're trying to get it to the highest point. So the highest point of understanding, the tattva, the shabda, you know, our evidence, that'll be the tattva sandarbha. The highest point of understanding how everything is Krishna, you know, and so it's all coming from the person. It's not, the impersonal is not the supreme, the person's the supreme. Then how the Lord is controlling all that, and but he's controlling that, you know, for the benefit of the living entities and their relationship with him. Then as Krishna, then as Vishnu going up through the things, then as Braja Krishna, that's the highest, that's his natural original form. And so then everything should be directed towards him. He's the center of everything. So everything is talking about him. You know, either directly or indirectly, at all times, all places, circumstances, like the fourth verse of the Chakra Shloki. Then you're going to have, then now in Bhakti Sandarbha, it's going to be showing now that relationship with that Supreme is through Bhakti. And Bhakti alone is what is recommended. Nothing else is recommended. It's the topmost, it's the highest form. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we see is that that's why it's mentioned that there is, you know, when the it's mentioned that there's, he's the greatest scholar in the you know, contemporary age. Like they don't say modern, they say contemporary. Contemporary means this time frame. So there hasn't been a greater scholar. You know, so in the Kali Yuga, there is no greater scholar. And so how he analyzes and puts it together, there's no gap for anybody to make have any doubt. If they say, no, I find so many things, that means you don't understand what he's talking about. I mean, he studied logic for 20 years in Varanasi. Go ahead, knock me out. Who's complaining? Oh, I found some doubts. Yeah. That's like Prabhupada says, he was talking about, you know, in India, there were so many, you know, like top managers within the society were having trouble managing India as the GBC. And so then it's always going, you know? And so then they were thinking who should be the next. And so then Karandar, who was the president of Los Angeles, and so he was really well known and respected in the society as one of the major managers. And he said, well, maybe, you know, Prabhupada, I could do. You know, he's just trying to be helpful and all that. But Prabhupada made the point of thin horse. And everybody's, you know, because this is all the Swamis, all that, you know, the GBC, everyone's around. They're all, what does that mean, thin horse? And he says the river, it's during rainy season. So it's extra water and it's, you know, going along, it's raging and, you know, like this and turmoil, you know, so much, there's words for that, you know, where it's, the water is very, I think, turbid or something like this, like this. And so all these big, strong horses, then they look at it, they go in and try to cross, but they get washed away. And after this, then the skinny, thin horse comes up and it's checking, okay, where's the best pace to cross? So Prabhupada said, thin horse. So if anybody says that, oh no, but the logic here, there, you know, on a good day, you might consider them a thin horse. You just might just consider them thin, not even a horse. You know, because there is no one, like we mentioned before, when we were doing touring in South India and meeting all the big scholars, you know, I mean, these are Sampradayic scholars and within the Sampradaya, they're considered the topmost. And a few of them mentioned that within their Sampradaya, you know, that people study Jiva Goswami because they have never seen such eloquence in Sanskrit. Even their own Acharya wouldn't use that because they were saying that Ramanujacharya, you know, he'll make something that's very solid, but you can also, some people are very expert in word juggling, can take what he said in Sanskrit and break it and try to apply their grammar and make it into something else and create an argument. But they made the point with Jiva Goswami, it doesn't matter what you do. You take the sentence, turn it around backwards, turn it upside down, break it up, however you like, it still means the same thing. And they said they've never seen Sanskrit like that. And so these are people that are light years beyond anybody who might say that, oh, well, you know, Jiva Goswami, this, that, and, you know, sit around in the pub and talk about, well, maybe he meant this, or maybe that, you know. No. So the point is this is the most exact and elaborate, you could say, work presented through the medium of Nyaya, you know, to establish the you know, Vaishnava Vedanta. Because as Vyasadeva gave, he's written it to break down all those things, but he's also left it so that others could follow it and be, you know, inspired. And so from that, they can get their different, the four sampradayas, they get their Dwait, Advait. I mean, Shankara, then Dwait, Advait, Vishishtadvait, Vishuddhadvait, and Dwaitadvait. Because I said Dwait, Advait first, there's two different ones, yeah. And so they can get that, you know, and Shankara gets his impersonal. So in that way, but then with this, then no, there is nothing left. So Baladev's given, and now here is like giving the Bhagavatam evidence of this in a logical form. So there is nothing more logical than this in the universe or in the cosmos. There isn't anything more. You know, so when it says he's the greatest scholar in the contemporary age, that doesn't, because that was 500 years ago. But that means going back, you know, to when Krishna spoke to Arjuna and up to now, when however long this movement goes on for, next 10,000 years, you know, so it's 9,500 years now. So it's not going to be any different. He is the greatest scholar. Is that okay? Okay.
Guru Maharaj?
Yes, please.
Guru Maharaj, in Germany, one devotee, ex-devotee, he wrote a big book about against the philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And he stated it on the philosophy of some acharyas in the Madhava Sampradaya, because they...
In the which Sampradaya?
Madhava.
Madhava, okay.
And there are different statements against our acharyas. Does it mean he didn't understand Jiva Goswami, or he just had intention to be against this con, and therefore, even if he will see that it's an excellent Sanskrit and excellent philosophy, he will not accept it. Because our devotees of ISKCON, they tried to meet with him, and they had long conversations, but he didn't accept them.
No, you have the thing is that ultimately the point is why are we in the material world? We're in the material world because we don't want to accept authority, which is Krishna. We want to be our own authority. You know, because if I say I feel like it, everybody should stand back and say, oh, yes, of course, because I'm the authority. I'm the central figure in my mind. And someone else will be the central figure in their mind. So as long as we have a cooperation of who's the center of attention at any one particular time, we have, you know, some kind of relationship. But as soon as it becomes someone, you know, someone else is the center and you don't agree with it, then there's a problem. So this kind of person doesn't have the intelligence, or doesn't have, means Krishna doesn't give the intelligence to actually understand real authority. Because he's only using the Madhva arguments against ISKCON. If you check his own philosophy, it's just he wants to be independent and do whatever he likes. Like that. I've seen others before also. You know, you're really using logic on that. Remember one devotee was talking to someone about, you know, some issue in ISKCON and, you know, making the points and going, you know, about Prabhupada as the founder of Acharya, going into everything like this and that. And finally, the guy who he was, he understood, yeah, okay, you're right. I accept this. But then he said, but you're the only one saying this. No one else in ISKCON saying this. So I still don't accept ISKCON. Right? Rather than saying, okay, that's theirs, that's what it should be. So then he could then, accepting that, he could then say, okay, I'll preach this and try to get ISKCON to understand it from this angle. Because he had an idea, he was preaching that angle so strong. Why doesn't he, now that he's come to a conclusion and realize, why doesn't he now preach this new thing? That's because they have an issue and they just want to fight with authority. That's all. So I've seen the same thing in someone else. It's just, actually, no, that's three. There's three. I've seen three examples of it. Two personally and one from someone else who was explaining it. Where they'll say it's like this, but you're the only one saying this. You know, others don't explain it this way, so I can't accept this one. So his point is he has authority issues. And he's only using the Madhvas, not that he's going to be a Madhva and act like a Madhva. You know, their rules are much more strict than us. So it's just you use one thing against another. So it would be what would be called, what is it? What's it? You have Vada, what is it called? Vada, then Jalpa, and what's the last one? Chala, no?
Vitanda, Guru Maharaj.
Vitanda, yeah, Vitanda. So he's just using Vitanda. He doesn't have his own philosophy. His philosophy is he just wants to be independent, do what he wants. You know, he doesn't want to follow all these things. He wants to be the supreme. He doesn't like people telling him what to do. So therefore, then they pick faults in ISKCON. But the point is ISKCON is the principles given by Srila Prabhupada, the founder of Acharya. That people are misusing it, that's not ISKCON. That's not even the institution. That's just people in the institution misusing it. But the actual mission of Prabhupada, which is actual, the real ISKCON, that they're not following. So, you know, it's not a fault with the society. It's a fault with individuals who misunderstand what the Acharya has given. So it just allows them independence and that they can do whatever they want. No one can complain if you say, hey, you know, why are you doing like this? Oh, but you guys do that. You know, so it's not actually about understanding the absolute truth. Not at all. You know, otherwise, why would they use something the Madhvas said? You know, especially when Lord Chaitanya then had problem with the Tattvavadis. You know, that means then he's not accepting Lord Chaitanya's opinion either. So then what's the point? Why? Means, you know, that the devotees had the compassion and tried to help. Nice. But once they see he's stuck in his view, why even bother? You know? Because he's had the opportunity, but if he speaks against the society, against that, who knows how long it'll be, how many hundreds, thousands or more of lifetimes before he'll come across, you know, the bona fide society again. Because you had it, and then you speak against it, and then you give evidence as trying to, it's not just, oh, you know, I get so attached. Other people, it's just, people blew it before. I was attached, I got in the senses, or this happened, or, you know, my parents, or, you know, somebody, things like that. Then that was all. They weren't making some philosophical thing, this and that, you know, to make themselves look like they're fabulous. They were just saying, I'm an idiot, you know? What can I do? But individuals like this, their false ego is so big as, you know, I can't follow it, so I have to make a philosophy so that it looks like I'm right and they're wrong. You know? So it's not of any value or importance. And I guarantee he doesn't even understand what the Madhvas are saying. Yeah. Yes. Jagadishji.
It's just that practical thing that we were reading in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about Karna and how Duryodhana became his friend. And it seems that it wasn't like a natural friendship, but because Karna was against the Pandavas, that's why Duryodhana liked him, not necessarily as a person, but because
yes,
of... So this is seems to be the same, that people, you know, take something to fight against somebody else, but not that, that they respect that tradition or that line. It's not necessarily.
No, it's just something against, because they'll pull something from there, something from here, something from anywhere to support their argument. Like that, which is fine as long as there's a consistency and it's in line with, you know, what Prabhupada's saying, what the scriptures are saying. But in this case, they're going against that. So it has no basis. It's a self-motivated position for one's own purpose so that they don't look foolish that they're not following ISKCON. You know? And if you have to step out to the side, but you're still following Prabhupada and what he's saying, but he's going against that. But the mud would say this. It's since when, you know? And the point is that, okay, which mud was? Because we had, you know, the Pejwar mud. They were very supportive. His junior, the Pejwar junior, he learned English through studying Prabhupada's Gita, and then he went out and he preached for Madhva. Because the Madhvas wouldn't do it. They say you can't cross the ocean, this, that, blah, you know, all this kind of jazz. Because their thing, it's like that aspect of there's sattvic souls, they'll naturally come to the movement. And Rajasic, Tamasic, even if you talk to them, you can't do anything. So that's not our philosophy. It's not Vaishnava. It's because the soul is naturally. So they're saying there's three kinds of souls. We are also saying that there's the conditioned soul, there's the liberated soul, you know, then, you know, the Nitya Siddha, the Nitya, it means you have the Nitya Siddha. Then Nitya Bada, you one who's still been and one who's been liberated. So you can say, you can break it up in different ways, but they're breaking up. No, this is the nature. It's inherent in the soul that they have this mode, which is wrong, because the soul is pure, is beyond all this stuff. So it's a bogus philosophy, you know? And so then, you know, you had these mudwas taking what we were saying very seriously and going out and preaching. You know, you see anybody who takes what Prabhupada says seriously and takes his example and they do it, their sampradaya goes up. You know? It just starts happening because he's the founder acharya for the Kali Yuga, you know, for Lord Chaitanya's mission. The others have their position for their time. It was good. But as soon as the founder acharya for Lord Chaitanya, when Lord Chaitanya arrives and then his founder, then the other ones, then their things working will go back to, I lost the thought. Somebody sent me a message. You know how it pops up at the top and that, and it said, yeah, it appears that it does go back over the pond. It means to England. Then I'm thinking pond. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The ocean. And then I lost it. So. So the whole point is that where's he getting this from? You know? And why would he say the other sampradaya? Take it from what we say ourselves. So people like that, the you know, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, it's the Brajvasis can't take these people very seriously. You know, they'll say is that they're Gaudiya, they're this or they're that or whatever they are. But who will want to take them seriously? Who in the spiritual world wants to take them seriously? Because you're using one Vaishnav group against another Vaishnav group. You know, and that for your own purpose, or you're going off of the Appa Sampradayas, you're saying, oh, but the ghost, this caste Goswami from Vrindavan said this, or Bhaktivinod Thakur is, you know, or this or that. And, you know, is any of the Lord's associates going to take these people seriously? You know, we have our purpose, we're people, we're connected to them, and so it works. Oh, okay, we were talking about Karna. And that, and so then, yes, it was just, it worked. Karna got benefit So you could say Karna was the better friend to Duryodhana than Duryodhana was to him. Because Duryodhana is he was against the Pandavas. This person was, you know, also, so he's an ally there. And at the same time as he supported Duryodhana in all his nonsense. So it wasn't as much, I mean, he felt bad about the Pandavas, you know, like that Karna, because, you know, they're being given such honor and that, and he's not. And Duryodhana will give him honor, so he'll go with that. Because Krishna, when his mother tells him about what's the situation, and then Krishna tells him about it, then his point is no, but Duryodhana, how will it look for a person, a friend, who he supported you, and then you leave him? So he's only looking at the Dharma aspect. He couldn't look at the Krishna conscious aspect, because as a Krishna conscious, Krishna's saying this would please Krishna, and the Pandavas are the devotees of Krishna, and Duryodhana is not. So actually the Krishna conscious thing would be to support the Pandavas. Because if Karna then went over to the Pandavas side, there's a good chance there might not have been a war. You know? And also is then, you know, then Karna would be the king. As Krishna pointed out, because he's the eldest brother, the Pandavas would have said he's the eldest, so he's the king. Yudhishthira would be his, you know, his minister, you know, that could give direction, and he could be the prime minister, you know, like that. And, you know, how powerful they would be, but it wouldn't happen. So it's not Krishna Khan. You can say, yes, on the material platform, then he supported friends, this, that, you know, they're going down, he's going with them. So that's nice, but it wasn't a Krishna conscious decision, because that you have to see is, no, it's about what would please Krishna. You know, so in other words, you have to support the Vaishnavas, not the demons. You know, that you can have that, okay, maybe he could not fight with Duryodhana himself personally, because, you know, Duryodhana did give him support, but that he's making trouble for the Pandavas, you know, and Krishna is taking that side of the Pandavas. Therefore, then he would support, you know, in other words, Yudhishthira's side is right, but he himself may personally not fight with Duryodhana. You know, because, or, you know, or his brothers or something, he would fight with everybody else. You know, like that, you know, then it's, he's showing that respect for what he gained from him. But at the same time, but, you know, it's not happening. It was Krishna's plan. So it that's how it went. Is that okay? Yeah. So ultimately, even things like this, friendship, you know, and all that has to be seen in what's supportive and favorable for Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise, then, you know, just the friendship itself, yes, that's respected because it's a principle coming from Krishna. But we see is where is friendship in its natural form is going to be with Krishna and his associates in Vrindavan, the cowherd boys and all that, you know. And so then that's going to be the standard of friendship. It's centered around Krishna. You know, and other friendship may be there, and we respect that. You know, like your neighbor, maybe they're not a devotee. They're nice, you interact on a nice thing like that, but when push comes to shove, you have to take Krishna. Yes, please.
Guru Maharaj, it's not regarding the whole of this topic, but because you mentioned now how Krishna told to the Karna that Karna could be in part of the world. Yesterday we discussed with my son this topic, and a question was that if Krishna was ready to make Karna the imperial, the main person in the kingdom, then why then Maharaja Parikshit was chosen to be king but not son of the Karna? Was it because Maharaja Parikshit was more qualified as a devotee, or because sons of Karna were born from the Anuloma marriage?
No, it would be as, yeah. The point is he didn't take up the position. He identified himself with Duryodhana and that, so he didn't identify with the Pandavas, so he wouldn't be in that line. He's identifying himself as the son of Adirata, not of of Pandu. So if he had come to support that, then as a son of Pandu, then he would be recognized in that way. But he didn't. He continued with that identity that he's the son of Adirata. Does that make sense?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So continuing here, then Manu says, continuing Jiva Goswami's commentary, Manu says, all the Vedas, Smriti, and conduct are the root of Dharma for those who know. The conduct of the well-behaved is satisfaction of the self. Manu 2:6. So for those who know, and those know the Lord is connected. They know this. So those who know Dharma, and specifically here, those who know Dharma as coming from Krishna. Right? So then they take Vedas, Smriti, and conduct, means the conduct of how the great personality. So the Vedas, it's describing there, points are being made. Some example is there in the Smriti. Then that'll be conversations between great personalities. And in there, there'll be much more, discussion that we can see how it relates to us. And then the conduct of those personalities, or, the leading personalities in our sphere and our scene, like that. And so then that is the root of Dharma, those who know, because it's all based on the conducts, based on the Smriti, based on the Vedas, and that's coming from Krishna. And so then that way, then you see, however. Then we go further. So that's the point. However, Prahlad's statement is superior to Manu's statement. Satisfaction of the Lord is superior to satisfaction of the self. This is correct, since it has been said. Quote, in the Bhagavatam alone, created by the Lord himself, is presented the real permanent object which can be understood by those persons without selfish intentions, and which bestows auspiciousness and release from the material world of miseries. In the Bhagavatam alone is presented the process for attaining that highest object, devoid of all material goals and liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:1-2. So then here is that he's bringing out is that satisfaction of the self, because Manu then mentions that you're going to, here as I said, Vedas, you start with there, as we the beginning of the discussion today was what I was actually explaining this verse from Manu, is that the Veda is the first thing. So what's authorized in the Veda? That's the spoken in the Smriti. What's authorized in Smriti? That is the conduct of the great personalities. And then from within that, then we look at it, how it applies to us, and we're satisfied that I am situated according to Dharma. But it's still secondary, because here we're talking about the Dharma, the Vedas and all that, because they're all aparavidya. So the aparavidya is then that knowledge which is secondary to the primary, which is pure bhakti. So when it's seen in line with pure bhakti, it's called aparavidya. When it's not seen in line with pure bhakti, it's seen on its own, as its own purpose, that's called avidya by the Upanishads. It's ignorance, because it may be, very elaborate and very nice and pious ignorance, but it's still going to bind you to the material world, right? So the satisfaction of the self is a clue that you've understood the right way of the secondary, but the actual satisfaction of the self is going to come when you satisfy the supreme self, then we'll be satisfied. So in other words, the soul is satisfied that the secondary is going nice, but until that's in line with the primary or pure bhakti, then it's not actually proper. So that's why he's saying Prahlad's statement is superior. Right? By this dharma, the mind is pleased. It is also, so Jiva Goswami continues, it is also said, yen atma supasidati. By bhakti, the atma is very pleased. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2-6. The affix su does not merely indicate very happy, but indicates the excellence of direct bhakti with hearing and other processes compared to varnashrama. Right? Because Manu is talking about the varnashrama aspect, how to situate yourself in the varnashrama aspect. And so you should be happy with that. You know, but it has to be based on Veda, Smriti, and conduct of these great personalities. You can't just base it on what I feel like. Because if you start for myself, I want to be satisfied, I want this. And then where I can get support from the conduct of others, Shruti and Smriti, then I will take that to support my position, right? So that's going to be jalpa. It's not actually real. You're not looking for conclusion. Here is that, what does the Vedas say? What does the Smriti say? And what is conduct, you know, and what is the conduct of all these great persons and how they say it applies to myself. Then within that context, now I look for how to apply it into my life. I'm satisfied it's working nicely. And so then that's how it's done. But for us, then we're seeing in the context of bhakti. So it'll go to that primary. And then you have the complete satisfaction of the soul. Does that make sense? So that's Daiva Varnashram. So devotees either talk about just Varnashram without Krishna, just the rules itself are important, and stick to that, and others reject that. But the point is you have to follow what this second verse of Bhagavatam says and what Prahlad Maharaj says, that no, it has to be about the Supreme Lord. That has to be the thing. Then it has actual meaning. Yeah? Narad was first born as a Gandharva. His best action was to sing about the Lord. In his second birth as a son of a Sudra woman, he heard about the Lord from devotee association. Thus, Narada did not disrespect other causes, such as Swadharma, Varnashrama, for finally attaining the position of an associate of the Lord. Thus did not respect other causes like that. So he was a Gandharva, so they sing, but he was singing about the Lord. And then he was the son of a maidservant, but then he was hearing from the great personalities, from the Mahabhagavats, about the Lord. So he didn't, he was pointing out that there are no other causes. Because he was singing about the Lord, then because he was singing about the Lord and he had this whole thing about impressing the ladies, he ended up as a Shudra. Right? And so then but because he was singing about Krishna, therefore then he got the opportunity to hear from the great sages about Krishna. So you see how Krishna arranges things. Even if there's punishment in that, it's arranged in such a way you can become Krishna conscious. Right? So that's the point, is that the whole Vedic system is anyone, anywhere in the system can connect to it and elevate themselves to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Yes? No? Very good. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, it looks like here same way which Krishna did with Bharat Maharaj, yes? Same Sri
Yes, Yoga. Yes, yes. The same kind of principle. Is that he became a deer, but he was a deer that was in the region of the you know, all the sages in the forest. So then he could come and hear from them and in that way develop his Krishna consciousness. Right? And then in his next birth as Jarabharat, then therefore he, you know, would be very careful to avoid any kind of association that would distract him from just be focused on the Lord. Because before he did as a king, he did this and that. And so he's just being very careful. Yes?
Yes, good.
Okay, how are we doing on time? Okay, so it's time to finish here. Jai. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.